Welcome to the Classic City Sports Podcast.
And McAllister down the left field line. Connor Tate is going to round third. He will score. And rounding third is Blaylock. He will score. And the Dogs rock it off.
If you're looking for the latest Georgia Bulldog news in football, basketball, baseball, and recruiting, then you are in the right place.
It's third down. Bryce Young's career. You need 10. Play clock at 4. From the pocket. Launching downfield. Underthrown and intercepted. Keely Ringo has an escort down the sidelines. All the way to the end zone. And Georgia is going to conquer the Crimson Tide.
Hosted by Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams.
Georgia on the mountaintop. Demons be gone and the drought is over. National champions at long last.
Just sit back, relax, and prepare yourself for these hot takes you're about to listen to.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Classic City Sports Podcast. As always, Jeremiah Stoddard and Jonathan Williams. Just a heads up to you guys, Jonathan seems to be having a little bit of internet stuff, so we'll see how this goes as we go through. But we have a lot to cover tonight as Georgia beat number 12 Missouri. Don't know what they'll be ranked on Tuesday when it's all said and done, but I'm assuming still a decent ranking for them. And then Ole Miss will likely have a top 10 ranking as they go into that matchup on Saturday against Georgia, which has been announced as a 7 o'clock night game on ESPN. So we get the game under the lights that everybody wanted this year, that everybody's wanted for a few years. This is the game that you want in that type of situation. But Jonathan, how are you feeling so far?
Well, still undefeated, still very much so in a position to go and chase after a national title. And when you're this many weeks in, when you're 11 weeks in, I believe, into the college football season, that's about all you can ask for, and just keep on pushing forward. Still got some great football games to play, especially a night game under the lights in Sanford Stadium. Always love that opportunity, especially against a top 10 football team. Like, these are the types of games that you look and hope for. I see that my internet is struggling already, so I'm sure that there's already some connection issues. But anyways, still, yeah, great opportunity against Ole Miss. Hopefully the Dogs can continue to deliver, and excited about this matchup. This is one that we've had circled on the schedule for the entire year. So excited to see what Georgia and Kirby Smart and them have in store for the Ole Miss Rebels.
Yeah, exactly. Looking forward to it. It's always a good matchup. You know, Georgia versus Ole Miss, we don't get that game very often. It's been a long time since they came to Athens. I think it was like 2011 or 12, somewhere in that range. I saw something about it. I can't remember the exact year, but you know, it's a big matchup that you wait a long time for, and this is exactly what you want it to be when you get it. You know, you get a top 10 matchup, you know, with everything on the line for both teams, in the sense that Georgia wins this game and they can clinch the SEC East before they actually go play in Knoxville. For Ole Miss, it keeps them kind of in the conversation. They do need some help from Alabama losing at this point since they beat LSU yesterday. So they would need some extra help since, you know, since they've got that one loss and Bama hasn't lost an SEC game yet. So a lot on the line, a lot being played for. The thing that surprised me is it's an 11.5 point spread. Now, we still need to talk about Missouri, so I don't want to go too far into the Ole Miss thing. But 11.5 points feels like a lot for this game for me. Just like it's felt like a lot every time they give, you know, a 16 point favorite over Missouri. I felt like that was a lot, and it turned out it was a lot for that game as well.
Yeah, you know, I guess Vegas always knows something. Georgia has not been great this season against the spread. I think they're like 2-7-1 or something crazy like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, they're just numbers. I mean, obviously their ultimate goal is to make the most possible money out of each and every matchup. So I'm sure that they're hoping that a lot of people are going to take Ole Miss on that at plus 11.5, and that line will continue to fluctuate throughout the week. So it'll be interesting to see what the number is by the time the game kicks off. My guess would probably be somewhere around 8-9 points by the time it reaches 7 o'clock on Saturday when it's time to kick off. But I mean, still interesting. I know I would kind of assume that Georgia's probably like a touchdown favorite in this one, especially a top 10 matchup. But I would assume as well that, you know, being at home, it being a night game, knowing that Sanford Stadium can impact this football game, that probably gives Georgia these 2 points already.
Yeah, I think most of the time when you look at the betting systems, a lot of times they give the home team, you know, 3 points or so just from being at home in that sense. But this game screams one score game for me. I'd say like a touchdown, maybe 8 points be the most that I would expect it to be from what my expectations are, because this is an Ole Miss team that will challenge you. They'll stretch the field and they'll make you work on defense, and they can string some drives together, which is what you have to do against Georgia. You don't necessarily get a lot of those big hitting plays, but you get a lot of, you know, 8 to 10, you know, maybe 12 play drives that end up in a touchdown because you have to kind of, you know, dump it around and go. But I expect Georgia to stand strong in the game overall, but that I don't know if I would put money on Georgia winning by 12 points to cover that spread, just because, like you said earlier, I think the number's 2-6-1 against the spread. I think that's what the numbers are through 9 games. So they've only covered it twice and they pushed once, and then the other 6 times, it just, I feel like Vegas has been giving Georgia big numbers, and I've looked at that several times this season. Now, I will say I was a little worried about like the spread against Florida, but I did say going into that game on Harrison and Dan's show was I expected a three touchdown win if Georgia played clean, and they played very clean in that game. So if Georgia plays a clean game against Ole Miss, they could cover it, but it would need to be a clean game and an efficient game.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I think one thing that kind of worried fans a little bit, as someone's already mentioned in the comments, is just Ole Miss's ability to run the football. You know, you think of Lane Kiffin and you think of a Lane Kiffin-led offense and you think of chunking the ball around the field and throwing the ball a whole lot. That is not what Ole Miss is. They are a team that is predicated on pounding the rock. You know, Jackson Dart is a very much so a dual threat quarterback, and then their running back room is great as well. Quinshon Judkins, he's a phenomenal running back. I've been on the record saying that I think he is the best running back in the SEC. You look at his numbers a year ago and what he's continued to do this year, even after battling back from an injury. I mean, it's clear as day that he is very much a great running back. But also at the same time, Georgia's defense has been great this year. I know that Brady Cook kind of got Georgia a little bit with his legs as well. And really what kept Missouri in the game for such a long time was their ability to run the ball. Schrader was phenomenal for them all day long. I think they finished today with 151 rushing yards when Georgia was holding opponents to under 100 on the season. So a big day for Missouri there, and they kind of did something that fans weren't expecting them to. You know, we thought about Luther Burden. We thought about Brady Cook and how successful this offense has been, and it's been through the air. And Missouri kind of did the opposite. You know, they started leaning on the run game, and a lot of that had to do with Kamari Laster being able to take away Luther Burden completely, which shout out to Kirby Smart and that coaching staff, because the decision to do that, the decision to take out a person like Tyke Smith, who has been phenomenal for you all year, but not only just that, not only to move Kamari over to a different spot into the slot, but then also to tell Julian Humphrey that, hey, you're going to be a big player in this football game and we need you to step up on the outside as well. Like, this is a big game for you. Both of those guys answer the call. I thought Julian Humphrey played phenomenal. Obviously, he thought so of himself, as he's saying that was his breakout game and that's what he's been waiting for. So that's great to see for him. But Kamari Laster, I mean, my gosh, I think he's been getting some disrespect all year long. People have not been talking about him. And we have the old saying of, if you're not talking about a defensive back, then that probably means he's doing his job. This game, there was plenty of talk about Kamari Laster, and rightfully so.
Yeah, that's exactly what we've seen so far, is a lot of teams haven't really wanted to challenge Kamari Laster because they do respect what he can do. But so with that, though, you don't get a lot of a national attention because you don't see a lot of the plays he's making because he's covering his guy while they're not looking at him. I wanted to say that the one game I remember people challenging him was against South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I know it was one of the games early in the season. I think it was South Carolina, and they threw at him several times, which kind of surprised me because most of the time they were going after Everett, you know, a good bit in all of these games. And they started to go at Everett a little bit yesterday, made a couple plays. He gave up a couple plays, but that's when I saw that they had Humphrey in. And Humphrey's played this season. Don't get me wrong when I say that. He has played this season, but he hasn't really played meaningful early down, like early snaps like this. And all of a sudden I saw him on there. I sent a text to y'all and I was like, did somebody go down? Is somebody like, did we decide to put him in instead of Everett for a little bit or what? But then come to find out it's because they pushed Kamari inside to that slot spot. So they put him on the outside and he definitely lived up to it, because I think there was one big play he technically gave up for like 20 to 30 yards, but it was a questionable play of whether or not the guy caught it in bounds. And so it could go either way. But other than that, he was very solid on that outside, which is exactly what you need against a team that can throw the ball pretty well. But you're exactly right. The biggest thing takeaway from this game was Missouri's ability to run between the tackles and then also on those stretches, because we weren't concealing the edge very well against their run game, and their running back was going off on us. I mean, he went 112 yards. Him alone was more than most teams have done against Georgia this year. I believe it was, last I had looked before this game, it was about 90 to 95 yards a game for an entire team that they have been giving up. So seeing a guy go for 100 yards against you, and then now you got Quinshon Judkins coming up next, that's something that I would look at for Georgia to try to adjust to.
Yeah, and obviously the big knock against Georgia right now on defense is that you do lose Jamon Dumas Johnson for the foreseeable future. I don't know exactly what that means. Obviously, with a fractured arm, it's going to be a little while before we see 10 out there. But that's also another reason why you've been getting 33 C.J. Allen into the mix a lot this year, because you prepare for those moments. Kirby Smart said it best himself after the football game. He said, you know, this is a next man up type of team. Like, when we need you, we expect you to go in there and deliver and execute the way that we expect you to. And so that's going to be on 33 now next to Smile Munden. So that's going to be interesting to see next week as well. But going back to Humphrey, and I think, not that Everett has been playing well this year, I think that he has been, he's been phenomenal for Georgia so far.
Because he does, and that's what teams on the other side.
Yeah, and that's what teams have done over the last few years against that new cornerback that Georgia's rotating in. They're always going to go to the guy that's not the veteran. But I think Julian Humphrey kind of provides another edge and another unique personality to a defensive back room. And that's kind of, I think, something you need at a position like that. Like, that dude wants all the smoke. He wants every ball thrown to him. He wants all the action. He wants to be on it, in on every single play, and he wants to make plays. And now Kamari Lassiter, he makes plays himself, but he does it in a more, I should say, quiet fashion than someone like Julian Humphrey, where Julian Humphrey's going to let you know he's about this business. Yeah. He's going to stand on his business, and he brings some swagger and some jolt to a secondary room that's already really talented. They've been phenomenal this year. Malachi Starks and Javon Bullard have been great at the two safety spots. And so I think that if you continue to rotate him, and if 12 is the guy that we start to go with for the foreseeable future down this last stretch of games, I think he could provide another spark to this defense, and maybe that's something that they need right now.
Yeah, and hey, shout out to everybody in the chat right now talking. We love when y'all do that. Rudes, yes, I don't know who Clay Vandegrift was, but he apparently was in for a snap on Saturday.
How about that, though? How about that, though? Georgia right, rotating in a quarterback?
Let's talk about that real quick, because when that happened, that was probably one of the few times this year that I've looked at it and said, what are we doing? Because I just didn't understand it, because you've got a quarterback that has done very well in those situations, and you took the ball out of his hand and put another quarterback. The only thing that you can hope for is that maybe they didn't notice, but there's no way they don't notice that you put a different quarterback in there. And when you put a guy like that in, you're not letting him throw it, because if you want to throw the ball, you've got a starting quarterback that is throwing for 300 yards a game and 72% completion percentage. You're not going to put Vandegrift in there and let him throw it. So all you did was tell the other team, you're running a quarterback power or something like that. And it didn't work. And then he goes out after that, and then now you've just lost a down for your starting quarterback. And I really didn't like that. I thought that was the most bizarre thing that they have done all season.
Well, I remember when Vandegrift came in, I was like, what the heck? I was like, is that Brock Vandegrift in at quarterback for us? And, you know, I get it, you know, maybe trying to provide a different look when you're down there in the red zone, you're trying to get a score and you just want to try something out. You know, maybe it's one of those moments where maybe just put something in film and just kind of get a feel for it. But I agree, maybe not the best time to do it, but then again, with the games that you have left on the schedule, if that is something that you're wanting to try, I don't know if there is going to be a perfect moment for you to do that. But yeah, I agree with you. I would say just keep rocking with Carson Beck and what he's been able to do in the red zone. But red zone has been something that this team has struggled with. And before we go and hit the panic button on that, I do want to point out that we were having these same conversations in 2021 for Georgia. I mean, me and you sat on here, it seemed like every single game, and when we came away with our takeaways and what things Georgia needed to improve upon, it was red zone. They just weren't getting the job done. They weren't consistently capitalizing on opportunities and putting the ball in the end zone. But then when it came down to later in the season, I mean like late in the season and the SEC championship game and those national title games and the College Football Playoff game, those struggles cease to exist. And I think that's just something that Georgia's going to continue to figure out. And I think they will figure it out. Mike Bobo and that offense have been great on all other parts of the field. it's just those last 20 yards that you got to kind of figure out. And that's the hardest part to score on the football field. You know, everything's super condensed. Your playmaking changes. Basically, the defense has an extra defender with the back end boundary being out of bounds. You can't play. You have to play tighter and everything. So I think it's just something that the offense is going to continue to get a feel for. And I wouldn't consider that to be a major worry. But, I mean, obviously, at this point in the season, it is something they have to keep in the back of your mind of, like, this seems like this is the only thing that's really holding this offense back.
Yeah, and like you said, it's a consistent problem. I feel like they had that issue some last year, even at times. I think for the past 3 years, while Georgia's still winning all of these games, right, they have had that one consistent issue. And it's exactly what you're saying. It gets real condensed, which means it's really hard to throw. And when it's really hard to throw and you can't afford a turnover, what do? You run the ball. Well, guess what? The other team also knows that, and they stack the box, and it gets really difficult to move the ball. So you got to get a little creative. So I think that's what they were trying to do by putting Vandegrift in there. I don't necessarily agree with it. The only thing that, and as far as what you're talking about, putting another quarterback in there and trying to give that look for other teams to have to look for, if you're going to do it, the only way it's going to work, in my opinion, is if you do it and you let them throw the ball, because then you really make the other team think about it, because then you've got them confused at what you're going to do. But when you go in there and you run quarterback power, you're not really helping yourself as far as putting something on film. All you got to do is prepare for the runner and then you'll be okay. So, but yeah, Georgia settled for 3 field goals in this game. And so that's something that you want to see get adjusted a little bit. And Rudes, you're pointing out something that's really important on there. Missouri, number one, good football team. Now, they're not as good as Georgia, but they are a good football team. And so they came in there ready to play. They had a top, 12 matchup. They are a good football team. They had only lost one game that they were leading in the fourth quarter against LSU. And LSU's got that one of those offenses that's really hard to stop. And they were scoring a bunch of points. They have played very well all season other than that game. And then they played well against Georgia and they lost. But they had a great defensive strategy. Their defensive line was dominating the Georgia offensive line a lot of the game, even when they've got it sacked a few times, but they were putting pressure on him, making him have to climb the pocket or get out of the pocket, and they were just making him very uncomfortable all game long. And the running game was not exactly as good as you want it to be. It took a while for some Georgia runs to start breaking open. In the first half, they weren't doing very well at all. Second half, they opened it up a little bit and they were able to kind of stretch the field that way, but it took some time. That defensive line for Missouri deserves a lot of credit.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were leading the SEC in pressure rate this season. That was the big talking point about that defense coming into today's football game. And you kind of knew that this is what teams were going to start doing against Georgia because they know who Carson Beck is at that point. And while Carson has done a phenomenal job this season of making plays with his feet when he needs to, and that's something that Kirby Smart spoke to earlier in the season of, like, seeing through the smoke, being able to know when it's time to tuck it and run, and extending plays with your legs. And I think he's done a good job of that. But nonetheless, he's not a Stetson Bennett. He's not a guy that's very elusive. He's not going to be able to escape the pocket as efficiently as Stetson Bennett did. So teams are going to come after. But that's also been Missouri's MO all year on defense. That is what they like to do. They like to create pressure and havoc, and they did a good job of doing so. So, yeah, nothing to do but clap your hands for them. I don't really have too many big stats on this game yet, Rudes, to be honest. I haven't done a whole lot of digging on it. I do know that one thing that stuck out to me is Georgia outgained Missouri by just 20 yards in this football game. You still win by 9 points. Missouri had 8 penalties for, I think, 56 yards, while Georgia had 6 penalties for a little over 40, I want to say. So I think that was two big differences in the football game. The refs were what they were. I understand they were frustrating. There were some calls that were probably should have gone the other way for both teams throughout that football game. I think the biggest one that Georgia fans want to pick and bicker about is the one where Nazir Stackhouse caught the interception that caught a blindside block on Smile Mundon. Probably shouldn't have been called, was really just in the midst of a play. He saw the ball was being thrown to that guy. Samaya was doing his job and covering and making sure that he was making the play that he needed to. He just didn't know that Nazir Stackhouse was 20 yards down the field about to return it for a pick six. And so that's another one of those plays where you settled for 3 when you probably should have scored 7, but that also had to do with the fact that you had the ball down inside the 10-yard line, and then all of a sudden you're back on the other side of the 50-yard line after that play. So big exchange, but Peyton Woodring deserves his flowers for the way that he's played down the stretch this year, especially struggling earlier in the year. I think he was 2 for 5 after the Ball State and South Carolina game, and now he's been absolutely money, made some big kicks again on Saturday, especially that one to extend it to a multiple-score lead. So guys stepped up when they needed to. You got the win. And I put this tweet out of Missouri did everything right that game. I mean, they did everything they needed to win that football game. They ran the ball. They got the ball to their playmakers. They made some big-time plays where they were just kind of throwing up 50-50 balls. Their receivers were coming down with it. It felt like every single time. It's just Georgia was the better team that day. They had the better plan, and they executed more than Missouri did. And that's what made the difference, and you won by 9 points. And I think that should be the biggest takeaway.
Yeah, and going back to that penalty, the penalty ended up being a 65-yard swing the other direction. So you went from like the 5 to like the 30 or something like that on the other side of the field. And you were still able to drive the field far enough to give your kicker a chance. And that was his longest of his career. I wanted to talk about that as well, because you were talking about, I believe he had missed 3 kicks through the first 4 games. Yeah. And then since then, I think he has made 12 straight kicks. And yep. This was the one that I was sitting there watching him line up for it. And I was like, all right, we're going to find out if he's really that guy or not. Because this is the first time really this season that it's been a high pressure kick from a long distance. So I think it was 48 yards, a long kick with a lot on the line. Because if you miss that kick, they're down by 6 points and they're pretty almost on your side of the field already. So they can drive the field immediately. You cannot miss that kick when you take that chance. Even Kirby said in his postgame, he said, you know, the analytics will say you don't kick that ball because of that. Because if you miss that, they are right there. They're only down by 6 points. They're in the driver's seat. And so, but he had the faith in his kicker to go out there and knock down that big shot. And it worked out. So it told me right there that we have a kicker on our roster, again, that you can trust in those big game situations to make a big kick. And we needed, honestly, we needed to find that out. I think that's probably why Kirby did it, because you needed to find out if you had that in your kicker. Because you got to be able to do that. We're at the point in the games, you got Ole Miss and Tennessee and then an SEC championship game coming up within the next 4 games. You have to be able to make those kicks. You might get in a situation where it's a do or die, win or lose kind of game. And then you've got to be able to have a kicker that can go out there and kick you, you know, close to 50 yards or maybe 50 yards. And he showed exactly what he could do. And hats off to the guy. Because like you said, early in the season, I know you and I talked about it, you know, offline was – I'm a little worried about him. You know, I'm, you know, we're 4 games in, he's missed 3 kicks. This is not looking good, but you got to look at it and say, this guy's a true freshman and he was one of the most talented kickers coming out of high. I think he was the highest rated kicker of high school, and he could kick a 60 yarder in high school. Give him a little time to settle in. And that's exactly what he did. And just hats off to the guy, because he calmed those nerves down and is showing you what he can do.
Yeah, I'm sure Ohio State would have liked to have Peyton Woodring last year during the Peach Bowl, that's for sure. And, you know, Kirby Smart continued to instill confidence in him throughout the year, and he continued to just, you know, if he did miss a field goal, Kirby was first guy to meet him coming onto the sidelines of like, dude, we believe in you. We keep putting you out there. We're going to ask you to keep kicking the football for us. And so just instilling that confidence, another thing of Kirby of like maybe in some of those moments, coaches might be likely to kind of get in their kicker's face a little bit, maybe chew him out a little bit for missing those kicks and not being fundamental, especially the ones that he missed early in the year. But Kirby was never that. Not to say that he coddled him, but he just continued to instill confidence in him, and now it's kind of paying off down the stretch. My guy Chase is pointing out another great point from this game is Oscar Delp continues to take steps forward each and every game. Got to see him a little bit against Florida, made the big one-handed catch to keep the drive going and keep pushing the ball down the field for Georgia. But this was the first game, really, in the absence of Brock Bowers, where Oscar Delp made multiple plays. And this is something that we kind of hinted at of like, yeah, it may take some time for Ford to get the ball rolling a little bit, but we know what he's capable of. We know that everybody has said and talked about how talented he is and how Georgia should not be worried about the tight end position moving forward because of a guy like Oscar Delp. And clearly he is more than ready to cut. And I think that, the blocking has always been there. Him being able to add into the run game as an end-of-line blocker, he has excelled at that this year. And that has a lot to do with him putting on like 30 pounds this offseason and him committing to playing in that role. But that also means that he isn't getting the touches that Brock Bowers was. But we also knew that this offense and Carson Beck had confidence in him because, heck, 3 weeks into the season when we were dialing up deep shots, a lot of the time it was Oscar Delp that we were shooting for. You know, we had that big missed one against Auburn on the road where if you hit that one, I think that game ends very differently. Yeah. And it was just kind of both on Carson for missing it, but also because Oscar Delp just never adjusted to the football correctly.
And that those was down the scene, wasn't it? Right down the scene?
Yeah, it was.
Yep.
And those are wrinkles that get worked out with more reps, and now you're getting more reps. And I think that's a big plus for Georgia when you do get Brock Bowers back, because you are going to get 19 back. You are going to see him in a Georgia uniform here in the next couple of weeks, probably, if not this week. If you have both of those guys rolling, this offense is only going to continue to get better.
Let's talk about that for a second, too. One, I want to say, Delp has looked really good in the absence. Like, even though the first game he didn't get a lot, but he's still made plays when you needed him to, and he's getting open down the field, and he made a couple big plays yesterday. So, shouts out to the guy for stepping up when somebody goes down. That's what you look for across the lineup. That's what we're hoping is going to happen at linebacker now that Pop is out and you need somebody else to step up. So we're hoping for that there. But Brock Bowers is, let's just say hypothetically, he comes back this week, right? How insane is that? I know that they said 4 to 6 weeks, but like that is 4 weeks. That is the low side of it. 4 weeks, because it happened right before your bye week. You got the bye week, you got Florida, and then you got Missouri, and then he's back for Ole Miss potentially. That's insane. This guy, that's why we both got on here and were so frustrated when everybody was saying, hey, you know, maybe he doesn't play anymore this season. Maybe he just, even if he kind of gets healthy enough, you know, you just say he's not 100%. You don't want to push it and you don't want to rush him. And so you keep him out and he sits out and gets ready for the draft, all that. If you knew anything about Brock Bowers, if you follow this team and paid attention to it, there's no chance that he would do that if he could actually play another game. He has been begging this coaching staff to practice for weeks now. And so it doesn't surprise me that all of a sudden there's a chance that he plays next week. I think for sure he dresses and maybe he gets out there, but and maybe he doesn't really do much right away. But I think at this point, I would expect him to dress out for this game against Ole Miss, even if it is just a, hey, guess what? He's on the sideline, guys. Y'all got to think about him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just to think that a week after having surgery, he was walking around the field after Georgia beat Florida, no crutches, just in a little ankle brace walking around the field. And I remember Christian and I were talking about it, and we were talking about it leading up to the Florida game. And he was like, yeah, I saw Brock Bowers walking around campus the other day, no scooter, no crutches, nothing. Dude just had a little ankle brace on. He's walking around the city of Athens, just like nothing ever happened a week after surgery. That dude attacks everything with the right mentality. He's a grinder, and Kirby Smart has mentioned that multiple times, that Brock is going to continue to do the right things. He's going to do selfless things, and this is one of those selfless things, because Brock doesn't have to commit to doing physical therapy and getting into recovery like he has so far and pushing it to where he can potentially play against Ole Miss. He doesn't have to do any of that, but I think he also wants to, and I think that is why you'll see him dress out this weekend. I don't know if he's going to play. I would be very shocked if we actually see him out on the field playing against Ole Miss, but I think you can bet some pretty good money on him playing against Tennessee. It would be really nice. It would be great to see 19 come out on the field against Ole Miss one last time in Sanford Stadium, and I think that's kind of the destination that he's been pushing for, that just so he can get back and he can be under Sanford Stadium lights just one last time. But I think it would be plenty of enough, and the crowd would get really into it just seeing him out there in some shoulder pads and dressed out, even if he doesn't get under the
returned quickly. Yeah, I think you definitely see him dressed out in full uniform on that sideline, whether he goes on the field or not, especially because, you know, this is senior day. It's the last home game in Sanford Stadium. This is their last chance to put on those shoulder pads in Sanford Stadium. You know, Cedric Van Pran Granger is going to be a part of the senior day festivities, and I would imagine that Brock Bowers would be too. And so with that, I would imagine that he, you know, they tell him, go ahead and suit up, even if they're not going to plan to put him in, you know, that they suit him up and they have him out there to go through all of those festivities and everything as well. But like I said, even if all he does is put on that uniform, he's got a helmet on or on holding it on the sideline, and Lane Kiffin has to look across and say, hey, number 19's out there. There's a chance that he goes in this game. Now we got to think about it and we got to actually plan for it. So that's something it's gamesmanship, right? Like, it's one of those things that you've got to give them something to think about. And if he's standing over there with his helmet, that gives you something to think about. You know, I obviously we talked about this a few times as well. Georgia is also doing what is going to be best for Brock Bowers. So if he is not 100% ready to go in this game, they aren't going to let him play because they don't want him to go out there and hurt himself or do something that, you know, would negate his ability to move forward the way that he should, or slows down the rest of the season for him, because he's very capable of coming back at some point this season if he's healthy. And he will be healthy. Even if you go for the 6 weeks thing, he would theoretically be ready for the Georgia Tech game at that point. But at that point, I think they might kind of hold him out and not really let him play against Georgia Tech up in Atlanta, just because there's no point in letting him do that in that situation. But nonetheless, based on the actual timeline that was given, the SEC championship game is, in my head, is something you'll definitely see. But I think it'll be sooner than that. Like you said, I could see him getting meaningful snaps against Tennessee, and I expect him to be dressed this weekend.
Yeah, and you know, that's one thing we mentioned about this, when he did elect to have the tightrope surgery, and that's what they decided was the best move for him. Is the good thing about the tightrope surgery is once Brock Bowers is 100%, he's good to go. Like, once he is done, once he is feeling good, like, that's it. There's no more, oh, he could retweak his injury. There's no more, we have to manage this and we have to load manage him or anything like that. Like, once Brock Bowers is good and he is good to go, he is going to be fine. We don't have to worry about that injury anymore. And that's the best thing about that surgery. And I think it's one of the large parts of why he wanted to do the surgery, because he knew once he was fully recovered from that, he was going to be 100% good moving forward. But yeah, if Georgia Tech is the game where it looks like he could come back in, I think Kirby Smart and them would say, like, look, you've terrorized these kids enough. We don't need you to go out there and play against Georgia Tech this week. We'll elect to have you against Alabama more than likely in the SEC championship game. But also noting on that, I was talking to my dad about this after the game and we were driving home, and I was like, you know, how crazy is it to think that Georgia is three games away from not having lost a regular season game 3 years in a row? Like, that is just ridiculous. Same. To think about 3 years in a row that this football team goes 12-0. I mean, I know we have to think of, like, oh, we forget what it's like to lose. We don't know, like, we're kind of getting accustomed to winning.
You really are starting to forget at this point.
It really is. It's getting to that point where you forget. I mean, gosh, we're, what, 25 games removed from losing a game? 26 games removed?
26 now, yeah.
26 games removed from having lost a game. I mean, of course you would forget what it's like to lose, because this team hasn't done anything but win football games, and especially for someone like Brock Bowers, who could very well finish his career with just one loss in his entire collegiate football career. That's ridiculous to think about and ridiculous to say, and it just goes to show, like, you no longer have to talk about this team of, oh, well, this is a trap game for them. Like, this Ole Miss game could be a trap game or anything like that. These guys have shown up every single week. They have continued to deliver wins. Now, they may not be the prettiest of wins. Sometimes I might look a little ugly, but gosh, they keep piling up wins in the dub column. And that's all that matters. At the end of the day, as long as you get a win, I know that's coach speak to say that, but if you keep winning football games,
it is what matters.
Yeah, it's all that matters.
So, That's exactly what you're looking for. Just go out there every single day or every single game and do what needs to be done. Like you said, it doesn't have to look pretty. As long as you get the win at the end of the day, you're still in contention for everything else that matters. And that's where Georgia's at right now. Just go out there and win. You know, they've had a couple close games that, you know, you wanted a little bit better of a performance from this season, and you've got some tough games coming up on your schedule. So it's time for Georgia to, you know, tighten those chin straps, line up on Saturday. You get to play under the lights against Ole Miss, a top 10 matchup. Like I said at the beginning of the show, this is exactly what every Georgia fan has been begging for a couple seasons now when you look at the schedule. And this year, everybody looked at this schedule and said, we've got no good home games. We got nothing again. Well, you got Missouri number 12 at home, midday game because of the CBS, but you got them at home. That was a good game. Everyone should say that's a good game. And then now you've got Ole Miss at home at night under the lights, a top 10 matchup. This is exactly what any Georgia fan wants in Sanford Stadium. You get the chance to go out there, make all the noise, and make yourself heard in this game and have an impact. But let's look at this a little bit before we jump off tonight. We talked a little bit about Ole Miss so far, but when you look at Ole Miss, what do you think is going to be one of the bigger challenges in this game for Georgia?
I mean, Lane Kiffin does one heck of a job of designing offensive plays. I mean, it's why he's made a living off of it. It is why he has continued to be the head coach at Ole Miss, because that dude can coach up some offense. And that alone is just something that you have to be a little precautious of. But also at the same time, I think one thing that Georgia can kind of help out, or Georgia fans specifically can help out with this football game, is it's great having your home environment behind you against anybody, but a lot of what Ole Miss does is pre-snap motion. You know, that's a lot of what they do on offense, and that's how they get into so many different offensive sets, and it's how they continue to be so successful on offense, is because those pre-snap motions dictate what they tell you what the defense is doing at times. It confuses the defense. You have to keep track of where everybody is, and it allows things to open up for you. But you can't do as much of that in a road environment that could, right. And Georgia fans have a great opportunity to just let hell rain down on the Ole Miss Rebels offense. I mean, you built it up yourself. You talked about it. It's a night game under the lights. I mean, it is going to be pitch black dark when this game kicks off. The stage is set. Get your popcorn, as Lane Kiffin said. The fans have a great opportunity to absolutely impact this football game. I haven't looked at the numbers. I will, of course, release those tomorrow like I do for my stat thread, and I'll give you all the numbers about penalties per game and whatnot. But I think that's the biggest thing is you could possibly take away one of the biggest strengths of this Ole Miss offense.
Yeah, you definitely could take away one of those strengths because Georgia's environment, I want something, and I got to go to that game against Tennessee last year, and that was probably the loudest I've ever heard Sanford Stadium. I want it to be the same type of situation. You've got a night game in this situation that it's everyone's going to be there and you know, had quite a few drinks by the time 7 o'clock rolls around, be ready to be loud and impact that football game. And you're exactly right. When that pre-snap motion that Georgia does, it doesn't work if the other team can hear, you know, the snap and everything like that, and they're not having to do a silent count. When they're having to do any type of silent count or anything like that, and all of a sudden the defensive line shifts in unison, it throws you off, and that's what you get, those false start penalties. It happened a ton against Tennessee in that game last year, and that's what you want to see from Georgia again this year. But my biggest concern for Georgia in this game is going to be their rushing defense and that defensive line specifically, and mostly the edge, right? Because we've talked about that a couple times this year. Georgia has struggled to set the edge against quarterbacks when they start scrambling out on you, don't really have it contained, and then they break off for big plays. Well, you've got Jackson Dart, who can do that pretty aggressively himself, and then you got Quinshon Judkins, you know, lining up, who is the leading rusher in the SEC, and he's got about 800 yards right now. He's a guy that I said at the beginning of the season, I picked him for SEC Offensive Player of the Year outside of like quarterbacks. So I expected him to have a good year, and he's going to go out there and he's going to be a problem. So you got to be able to set the edge and then make sure that rushing defense up front, those defensive linemen can, you know, hold their own, stay in their run gap, you know, schemes where they're supposed to be. They stay in their responsibilities and push the runner outside or to a different spot so the linebacker can come make a play, that kind of thing. So that's what I would look at big time in this game, is their ability to slow that down. Missouri was the first team all season that's really been able to just run up the gut on Georgia, you know, pretty much when they wanted to, and they were gashing us last week. So seeing that going into a matchup with a really good run offense with Judkins back there, it's definitely something that I'd be watching.
Yeah, and I think you could see something Kirby Smart and them do what they typically do best, and they'll scheme up a defensive game plan that helps them shut that down. You know, it very similar to how, hey, we're going to play Kamari Lassiter in the slot. Maybe you throw something else out there. You use a little bit different personnel to help out with the zone reads and the run offense of Ole Miss this game. So, I mean, Glenn Schumann and Kirby Smart are at the best of what they do, especially when you add in Will Muschamp and all those other guys on the defensive staff. They're going to put together a great game plan. They have consistently outcoached every single opponent this season, and I would like to say they do the same on Saturday. But I think a very vanilla way to look at this game and a very easy way to break this game down is Ole Miss's biggest strength is offense. They will be going against Georgia's defense, who maybe not be the best strength of this team this year, but still really, really good defense. Very good defense,
yeah.
Georgia, really, really good offense. Ole Miss, not so great defense. And so when you put it in plain terms like that, and look, Georgia fans should no longer worry about shootouts. They should no longer worry about having to score with any opponent. That is not the case anymore. You know, Brooks last week brought up a great point of how, you know, this team a few years ago, the killer stat was if the quarterback has to throw for 30 or more times, Georgia is not going to win that football game. That's just a fact. Yep. Now you go into every single game, every single week, expecting Carson Beck to throw the ball 30 times and expecting this offense to put up 35 plus points every single week. So going into a game like this, you really shouldn't be nervous about Ole Miss scoring points. It should just be more so of the fact of you hope your defense can just get enough stops and they can contain that offense and don't allow them to score so quickly and efficiently like they have this year.
Going back to, because I forgot to say it earlier, when talking about stats or things that I saw or that we saw from the Missouri game that stood out to me, well, Georgia can throw the ball a lot, and they, you know, averaging 300 yards a game, throwing for 250 yards every single start this year for Carson Beck so far, with yesterday being the lowest at 254, I believe. One thing that did stand out to me is somebody had posted a clip of all of his completions from yesterday. So I didn't see all the incompletions in this video, so I don't know how many were attempted when I say this, but of the passes that were completed, only three of them were more than 10 yards downfield in the air. Now, some of them were caught and then ran for more than 10 yards, but only three of his completions were in the air for 10 plus yards. One of the biggest ones obviously being Ladd McConkey down the middle on that post route. I, like I said, without seeing all of the incompletions to know, they really didn't feel like they tried to stretch the field that much against Missouri. They were trying to play a little bit more conservative on offense And, you know, in the first half, it kind of hurt you a little bit. You weren't able to do too much. And then in the second half, you got some stuff to click and you were moving the ball. You scored 20 points in the second half. Can't complain about that at all. But that is something that stuck out to me that I think I would like to see a few more attempts in that aspect, or at least a few more completed against Ole Miss, because like you said, their defense gives up a ton of points. They give up a lot of yards, and Georgia is scoring with the best of them. Georgia's averaging 40 points a game right now. Ole Miss is coming in like at 38.8, I believe, a game offensively. So as long as you can score like you've done all season and just expect your defense to get a few stops, then you shouldn't have an issue winning this game. Once again, I don't know if it's by 11.5 points, but I do think that Georgia has the ability to score with anybody this year, and just hope your defense makes a few stops like you were saying.
Yeah. Win and you clinch the SEC East again. I mean, no better football game to close out the year at home at Sanford Stadium. I will be at this game as a student, final game as a student for me. Little teardrop down my eye. Been a fun ride, but super excited to be at this football game and just witness this environment. Nothing better than, I mean, this is what college football is all about. I said it last week of this is the stretch of college football where everything is great. This is the best time of the year for college football because every single game matters that much more. Every single game has that much more on the line, and it just provides some great college football games. And I think this is going to be one of them. Obviously, the TV broadcasts view it the same way. So super excited to see what happens this weekend.
Yeah, and Stan, you are correct on that. That is exactly what happened. They were getting a lot of pressure, as we were talking about earlier, on Beck, so they didn't have the opportunity to draw up a lot of big shots for Carson on Saturday. So what you need on this coming Saturday against Ole Miss is you need your offensive line to hold strong and give them a little bit of time to let that offense cook like they need to. So we'll see how it plays out, but I'm excited about it. This is exactly, you know, the type of game that you should be going out as a student with, and how good would it feel for Georgia to go to Knoxville the following week and it not matter? That would feel incredible. Now, it matters in the sense that you can't just go up there and lose that game, because then it puts you in a, you know, must-win situation the rest of the season. But if in the sense of it doesn't matter who you don't have to win that game to win the SEC East. You've already got your ticket punched to Atlanta. That would feel really good for Georgia and for all the fans.
Yeah, I mean, it alleviates some of the pressure off. And, you know, we thought that game was going to be the one that decided who wins the SEC East.
Yeah.
Not so much the case anymore, but still going to be a great football game, another really big game to look forward to. That's going to do it for me, unless you got anything else, Doctor.
I'm good.
You're shaking your head no, so we'll keep moving on into the post-show credits. Guys, we have appreciated so much of the support over the last few weeks. You guys have been lighting up the comment section. You guys have been lighting up the like button. You guys have been lighting up the subscribe button. Keep on doing those great things for us. Continue to support us. We love seeing the support, and we recognize it. We recognize when you guys are in here. We recognize it when you guys are showing love after the show. If you're watching us after we do our live show in the comment section, we appreciate it and love all of it. Stoddard and I are always talking about how much we enjoy and seeing people that tell us that they enjoy the show. You know, that's something that we put in the time, but you guys also put in the time listening to us. So again, we just appreciate every single one of you guys that continue to support the show as we are on the uphill climb continually. We're always climbing and growing, and we can't thank you guys enough for the support that you continue to show. There's all the socials down below. You guys know this drill by now. You know the ads by now. You know what that is for by now. And you know you should go follow us to keep in touch with the show and keep in touch with anything else kind of content that we create throughout the week. But that is going to do it for us. Stoddard, you can close us out.
Hey, as always, keep it classy in the Classic City. We will see you next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Classic City Sports. Take a second to subscribe, rate, review, and share with your friends and family. Feel free to reach out to the Classic City Sports Crew on Twitter with any topics you'd like discussed. You can reach out to Jeremiah at The Stoddfather, to Jonathan at Dr_JWill, and make sure to follow at Classic City Pod for show updates. Check back next week for a brand new episode. In the meantime,
to the sports, which express the sentiments of the entire Bulldog Nation.